Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for getting up early and coming down here and braving the cold weather that I don't think any of us anticipated. So it's a pleasure to be here and to serve on this distinguished panel. My role will be to talk about the burden of prescription drugs and who's at risk. I will also discuss CDC's public health approach to prevention. We really are at an important moment for this public health challenge and on the cusp of really stemming the tide. CDC has played an important role in sounding the alarm, raising visibility of the health impact of prescription drug overdoses, and working to better understand the causes of the epidemic. This includes the increase in the prescribing of opioids in the treatment of chronic non-cancer pain, where their utility for long-term pain relief is uneven and the risks may outweigh the benefits. There is an ever-growing groundswell of large-scale, bipartisan, and multi-sector commitment to address the epidemic, and the ASTA's presidential challenge that Dr. Klein will highlight underscores this momentum. I have nothing to disclose. So if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then these pictures are worth 125,000. That is the number of prescription drug-related deaths in the last decade. This time series map shows state-based drug overdose mortality rates shifting between 1999 and 2010. CDC has declared prescription drug abuse a public health emergency. In fact, prescription drug overdoses are among the few causes of death that are on the rise, and the trends, as evidenced here, are stark. Similar to how the state-based obesity maps in the last 30 years poignantly highlighted the bulging waistlines of Americans, these drug overdose maps show the epidemic taking hold across the country. Every state has seen dramatic increases in mortality rates, with some states in the Appalachias and in the Southwest being particularly hard hit. In 10 short years, we have seen this shift, fueled in part by an underappreciation of the addictive potential of these very powerful drugs for treating non-cancer pain. As most of you know, opioid pain relievers such as OxyContin and Vicodin are responsible for driving the dramatic increase in overdose deaths over the last decade. The purple line is the one to follow on this slide. The trajectory and rate of increase for opioid analgesics is much different than that for other drugs between 1999 and 2010, and you can readily see the fourfold increase in deaths. The number of deaths from opioids now outnumber those from heroin and cocaine and all other illicit drugs combined. In 2012, the most recent year for which we have data, 16,000 people died from a prescription drug overdose, or about one death in every 33 minutes. In 2012, we saw the first national drop in prescription opioid overdose deaths since the 1990s, nearly 1,000 fewer people overdose in 2012 than the year before. And this drop mirrors a drop in opioid prescribing rates and highlights the way forward for making even more progress in reversing this epidemic, namely, to continue to address prescribing. That said, the 2012 data do showcase another troubling trend. As Linda mentioned, the recent sharp growth in heroin overdose deaths, a phenomenon not unrelated to opioid overdose epidemic, the opioid overdose epidemic, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. So one of the drivers of the increase in opioid overdose deaths is the abundance of supply of these drugs. This graph shows the relationship between sales of opioids, the green line, and the number of deaths from them, the blue line. As you can see, the amount of opioids sold increased. As the amount of opioids sold increased, so did the number of deaths. The supply of opioid pain relievers is larger than ever. The quantity sold in 2011 was four times that sold in 1999. And while ARCOS data is not complete for 2012, other sources are signaling a drop in prescribing. The red line shows that substance abuse treatment admissions for opioids increased dramatically over this time period too, with again a recent drop in 2012. And by the way, opioid overdose cost about $20 billion in medical and work loss costs annually. At the core, the prescription drug overdose problem is a prescribing problem. Healthcare providers wrote more than 259 million prescriptions for opioid painkillers in 2012, with wide variation across states. Healthcare providers in the highest prescribing state, Alabama, wrote almost three times as many of these prescriptions per person as those in the lowest prescribing state, Hawaii. Most of the highest prescribing states, as you can see, were in the South. Earlier studies suggest that regional variation in the use of prescriptions cannot be explained by the underlying health status of the population. As Dr. Tom Frieden, CDC director, declared recently, sometime the treatment becomes the problem. And to reverse this epidemic, we need to improve the way we treat pain. So rates of opioid use and overdose deaths are highest among men, people in their working years of life, and non-Hispanic whites. Poor and rural populations are, in general, more likely to experience prescription drug overdoses, too. People who have a mental illness are overrepresented among both those non-medically using opioids and those overdosing on them. And finally, those at greatest risk likely have multiple prescriptions, are seeing multiple prescribers, and are on a high daily dose. And these factors obviously have important implications for prevention. As I mentioned earlier, heroin use and overdose are increasing too. However, they remain far lower than opioid misuse and overdose. The number of persons with heroin dependence and abuse more than doubled between 2007 and 2012 to nearly 470,000. While the heroin data are alarming in and of itself, more than 2 million people reported opioid abuse and dependence. Cities, counties, and states from across the country have reported recent increases in heroin overdoses. And two things appear to be driving the increase in heroin overdoses. First, the widespread prescription opioid exposure and increasing rates of opioid addiction. And second, an increase in the heroin supply and its purity and cost relative to RX drugs. Presently, there's no robust evidence that recently enacted laws and policies regarding prescription opioids are responsible for the large-scale shift to heroin. Again, more than four times as many people still die from prescription opioids than die from heroin. The major increase in prescription opioid abuse and addiction has fueled the rise in heroin use. More than three out of four people seeking treatment for heroin dependence were exposed to opioids before heroin. And more than seven out of 10 people who reported past year heroin use in between 2008 and 2010 also reported using opioids non-medically in the past year. And the relationship between prescription opioid abuse and heroin is not surprising. Obviously, heroin is an opioid, and both drugs act on the same receptors in the brain and produce similar effects. The connection between opioid and heroin misuse suggests that public health interventions addressing the opioid epidemic may help curb the heroin abuse and overdose epidemic, too. So I want to give you a sense of the broader federal context and juxtapose CDC's role with that of other federal agencies. To do this, we have plotted their areas of expertise or regulatory authority along a continuum from drug approval, manufacturing, and prescribing to preventing drug diversion, harm reduction, and treatment for those who become addicted. FDA oversees drug approval process, and NIH provides crucial biomedical research to inform this process, too. DEA regulates drug manufacturers, and CDC's core overdose prevention work focuses on controlled substances, prescribing, and dispensing. DEA and the BJA, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, work to investigate and prevent diversion. And finally, SAMHSA leads the federal response to substance abuse treatment and harm reduction, and NIDA provides critical research into the disease of drug addiction. I should mention that the White House Office of the National Drug Control Policy coordinates these diverse federal efforts. These are general areas of authority and specialization, but of course there are some natural overlaps. So, for instance, prescription drug monitoring programs are valuable for public health surveillance, tools for clinical practice to inform prescribing, and means of identifying and preventing criminal diversion, and a way to identify those in need of substance abuse treatment, too. So a lot of federal agencies have a vested interest in PDMP success. Much of CDC's work addresses state-level interventions, and you'll hear a lot more from Dr. Klein and Dr. Jarvis. States have access to the major policy and program levers that can reverse this epidemic. Specifically, states maintain prescription drug monitoring programs, regulate healthcare professions, monitor the problem in their state health departments, and run large-scale public insurance programs, including Medicaid. And I want to highlight two of the most promising interventions, PDMPs and patient review and restriction programs. First, PDMPs. These are state-run databases that track the dispensing and prescribing of controlled substances. Though virtually all states have an operational PDMP, every state except for Missouri, and we hear that's in the works, these important programs do vary considerably between states in their scope and their impact. The other linchpin intervention are patient review and restriction programs, or so-called lock-in programs. These programs enable state Medicaid programs to rein in Medicaid patients' overuse and possible abuse of physician services and prescription drugs without having to terminate Medicaid benefits altogether. They do this by allowing Medicaid programs to restrict patients suspected of overutilization to a single designated provider, pharmacy, or both. So success is possible, and recent accomplishments in Florida and other states are a testament to the opportunities before us. Prior to 2010, Florida had a major problem with prescription drugs, and between 2003 and 2009, Florida saw an 84% increase in RX drug overdoses, with 8 people dying every day. Pill mills were rampant. Beginning in 2010, Florida legislators took action, tightening controls on pain clinics and how they were regulated. The DEA and Florida law enforcement worked together on Operation Pill Nation. More recently, legislators prohibited physician dispensing of Schedule 2 and 3 drugs and expanded regulations of wholesale drug distributors. Florida saw a huge decrease in opioid prescribing and overdoses, especially with oxycodone. Opioid overdoses dropped by 27%, and oxycodone overdoses dropped 52%. While it's still early, it does spotlight the promise and possibility. So CDC is focused on leveraging our unique expertise and capacity, and we're specifically aiming to do 3 things: improve data quality and use to monitor trends and the causes of the epidemic, 2, to strengthen state public health capacity, and finally, to improve patient safety by supporting healthcare providers and systems with the tools and data they need to respond effectively. One of our signature initiatives is a $6 million program that we call Prevention Boost. Our goal is to advance prevention in 3 key areas: maximizing prescription drug monitoring programs, improving public insurance mechanisms to protect patients, and evaluating policies to identify state-level prevention efforts that work. The 5 Prevention Boost states, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, and West Virginia, are among the states with the highest drug overdose burden in the U.S., but they've also demonstrated the readiness and collaborative approach needed to make immediate progress on reversing this epidemic. So thanks very much. Let me now turn it over to Dr. Klein, who will talk about the ASTO Presidential Challenge.